This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is just coming up to 7:16. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And now we're moving on to a story related to our vaccine rollout, and more specifically, how that rollout is working out and what could be done better when it comes to reaching the more rural areas of our country. In this case, in particular, in a question that has come up following a very interesting story that was highlighted last week of two Orang Ulu women of Punan ethnicities who journeyed quite a considerable journey to come and get their vaccinations done.
There's so much here, right? In the first place, the fact that they are both in their 80s, Leanne Jubin is 86, Apong Saleh is 87 years old. So never mind the distance of the journey, that's one thing. And then to do that in when you're octogenarians is quite another. So this was based on a story by Dr. Marcos Popi, who's the medical officer in the Belaga Health Clinic. And just for context, the vaccination program in Belaga in Sarawak began on May 7th. And they essentially, the women had to travel on a boat through multiple rivers through the rain in order to get to the vaccination center. And while they've been rightly praised for their determination to protect themselves, their communities, others have also pointed out that there are concerns here about vaccine distribution in rural areas and how the government needs to do better, because it's one thing to have people determined enough to make their way there. It's quite another thing to endeavour instead to perhaps bring the jab closer to them.
Yes, and that's what, I mean, when you look at what has been put in place, specifically for Belaga, which is where these two women came from. According to that medical officer, Dr. Marcos, the government clinic's vaccination team does plan to travel to rural areas of the Belaga district, and they'll be traveling there using the Rajang River. They'll be using four-wheel drive vehicles and a helicopter, and they're also planning to cover several other rural areas, which include places like Matalun, Tegulang, Longjawe, Nahajale, and a few others. But this brings about this question of, this is one place and this is one experience that we're hearing of. How is the rollout happening? Is it being planned in a way that's accessible to people? Because really, the idea is not for them to travel miles and over rivers and whatever to come and get vaccinated. The idea is to make it as accessible as possible.
Yeah, I think that really speaks to... We go on and on, really, about how COVID-19 has in some ways exposed the strengths and weaknesses of existing systems. And honestly, the rural-urban divide when it comes to healthcare is not new. In this case, it's not even rural. We're talking about remote. So these are not new challenges. And I think it's just become more urgent in some ways to address them.
Do share your thoughts with us. Do you know of people who live in rural parts of Malaysia? What are your thoughts on how the vaccine is being made accessible to our rural citizens? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now joining us on the line is Dr. Sharuna Varghese, who is the co-founder and director of Health Equity Initiatives. Dr. Sharuna, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Now, how did you find out about this particular story, and how representative is it of challenges that others living in these sorts of remote areas might face?
Well, to tell you quite honestly, I got to know the story when your colleague actually texted me, you know, and sent me the link to the Malaysia Kini news item. But having said that, I would say that you know, it's not unique. We know about the healthcare challenges in East Malaysia, and I think you've correctly put the spotlight on rural healthcare within the context of everything that's happening during COVID. But I think when we talk about rural healthcare, it's also not a homogeneous phenomenon, because there is quite a difference between the rural healthcare in West Malaysia and the rural healthcare, you know, in East Malaysia. Now, to the credit of the Ministry of Health, this focus on building rural healthcare infrastructure, you know, it is something that began way back in the 1960s, even before, you know, other countries were talking about this during the Alma Ata in the 1970s and so on. But what we see is that it has not been a balanced development. And while it is quite accessible geographically, there is a wide, extensive network of rural health clinics, especially in West Malaysia, and it's geographically more accessible. I think when we look at West Malaysia, it's quite different. You have geographically inaccessible areas, but we also have, you know, large indigenous population living in these two states of Sabah and Sarawak. And I think when we also look at the hospitals in East Malaysia, at the time that they were built for a small number of people that were registered to that area. But, you know, the rural-urban movement of people, undocumented migration, all this, you know, has put a strain on the health systems there. And what we also see is that, you know, to access healthcare, not only have rural folks have to come out from the kampung to the clinic, even if there are referral services from the clinics to the hospital, transportation is a huge issue. It doesn't seem, you know, from research that is done by, you know, our team in Monash as well as other indigenous health scholars, that, you know, ambulances, that kind of a transportation for referral is also readily available. So most often, either people avoid care or you have to resort to, you know, private ambulance services, which is quite expensive. And then there is also the lack of, you know, medical officers and specialists. So even where there are healthcare facilities, they are understaffed. And I think it is important to actually visibilize the issue of indigenous health here when we talk about East and East Malaysia, because there is an invisibilization somehow of the issues, the factors that predispose them and exacerbate their health risks and also impact their access to services.
What could be done then, you know, with all these challenges in place, what could be done to bring jabs and treatment in general closer to these communities?
So if you look at vaccine uptake, I mean, there are many issues here that, you know, factors that promote that. If you look at experience across, you know, different countries and places, first of all, there's a practical logistical issues of, you know, availability of services. And, you know, as you rightly said, COVID-19 has kind of put that spotlight on these fault lines in our systems, and we are kind of scrambling now at this point. But, you know, but I hope that this will be a lesson for especially the political leadership of the country to, you know, commit much more than they are doing now to building our health systems. I think if you look at the Ministry of Health, doctors, the nurses and all of them, they've been valiantly, you know, carrying out these services on a, you know, health budget that has very marginally only, you know, changed over the years. So there definitely has to be a higher commitment, especially in investment in infrastructure of, you know, healthcare has not really increased over the years. It's been very marginal, almost nil. So the political leadership of the country has to do much more to, you know, to strengthening of our health system. The second factor that's important for our uptake is, you know, knowledge. Providing people the information, you know, of what to anticipate, what it is about, the benefits and all of that. But importantly, it's also trust. And if you look at the scholarship on indigenous health in this country, you have, you know, scholars like Dr. Wong Yong-soon and so on, whose research have actually amplified the issues of mistrust between indigenous communities and the health system. And for a variety of reasons, either it is the cultural barriers or or, you know, it is even historical factors of oppression during the colonial times. And even though that was such a long time ago, the perception, you know, towards the health system. And the only way that trust can be built is really by working closely with the indigenous communities. So it's not to say that the government is not doing anything at all, but is that what they want? And so listening to them, what exactly do they want? And actually looking at, you know, the factors, the social factors which are creating health risks for them. And I think there's also research related to how displacement from their ancestral lands, the logging and all of that that's taking place, you know, is kind of depriving them of especially the forest, the food, the shelter, the medicines that they rely on. So that building of trust. And then the government actually, I think in Sarawak, they have this program of the village health promoters, which, you know, included having members of the community themselves participate with the formal health system in bringing healthcare to the communities. But what we understand is that at least initially there was no payment for these people and the dropout rate was quite high. And this is a global kind of phenomenon we see with community health workers, that there is a lack of formal recognition in the health system. So they need to be formally recognized. They need to be paid. And we also know that all over the world where the system works of, you know, having such village health promoters or community health workers is when they have ongoing training and supervision. So it's working closely with these communities as well as, you know, logistical issues.
Sharuna, are you still here?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Sorry, I thought we lost you.
Okay.
I wanted to know, what do we know about uptake and willingness to get vaccinated amongst these rural communities? Because we rarely hear about them when it comes to this vaccine rollout.
Actually, I think there's very little in the public domain. But what we know from, like, my team did a study last year looking at the impact of COVID, the access to treatment, and looking also at past pandemics and, you know, how the indigenous communities, we did it with the Orang Asli here in West Malaysia and with the indigenous people in Sabah. And I think it's mixed. There are those who understand it and really want it, but access is an issue. And there are also those for whom, you know, they don't understand it. Then there are issues of, you know, mistrust and so on. So it's a mixed kind of feedback, but there is not a lot of information in the public domain on this.
Dr. Sharuna, we just have a couple of minutes left with you. And I wanted to know, we've had a pretty wide-ranging conversation today about the challenges, the things that need to be done. When we look at this story, what lessons can we take away from what happened and what needs to happen next?
So as I said earlier, I think the first thing is, you know, strengthening our health system. There has to be, the political leadership has to put in much more, especially much more investment in infrastructure. You know, we see somehow an expansion of private sector health, but really where was the private healthcare sector during the COVID pandemic? You know, we need stronger public investment in healthcare. What we also need to see is the stronger focus and commitment on indigenous health, which is sensitive to the needs and listens to the needs of the community and has a strong participation from the indigenous community in terms of this. I think thirdly, even when we talk about rural populations, there are specific subpopulations in rural areas that need extra attention, and, you know, the elderly, the disabled. So these are, you know, groups that need specific strategies to reach out to. So I would think that these are some of the critical lessons, and building those relationships, very important. Although I'm saying last is last but not the least, building those relationships with these communities. And we have so much technology today, so bringing that to bear on the strengthening of these working relationships.
Dr. Sharuna, thanks for speaking with us today.
You're welcome. All the best.
Same to you. That was Dr. Sharuna Varghese, co-founder and director of Health Equity Initiative, speaking to us about our vaccine rollout when it comes to the more remote parts of our country. you do share your thoughts with us on this. Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.